Hey, Michelle.
Hey.
Hey, do you ever take notes for the show and then forget what you meant by them?
I don't know if I forget what I meant because I take like very detailed notes, but I do sometimes, like, I'll be watching it and I'll get like, you know, half of a thought out and I get distracted by something like in the show that I'm watching. So then I try to go back and put the thought in. I did that today. I had like half a sentence that was really important this morning and seemingly, and then I went back to it and I had no idea at all what I was going to say. So it's just gone.
I use Apple Notes, and you can leave them on your phone or whatever, and they all kind of merge together. So during the week, if I have a thought about this show, I'll make a note, and then I, like, now, and it's when I read that note, I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, but you have to be talking about, like, last week's, because this just literally from the time this airs at 9 o'clock last night, Eastern time here, until the time we go on, which is usually 9 a.m. the very next morning, all I do is sleep and try to come to some kind of, you know, understanding of Saul. It's like this 12 hours of, well, and sleep, but 12 hours of just really delving into it.
I don't know where this episode went, Michelle, but If Jimmy McGill picked me up and we drove around the block and stopped where we started, I would still be fascinated by the ride. This didn't seem to really move very much forward, but it's so interesting just to watch everything they do, even if it's not plot, you know, motivating.
Yeah, I don't know if I completely agree. Well, maybe. I don't know that we need to always be moving forward, do we? In this? I mean, I think it's okay just to tell the story.
Well, that's what I mean. Well, I guess we learned a little bit more about some things in the past. I guess we learned a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like we learned actually quite a bit if you really dissect the episode. But I don't even think that they have to spend some time on character development, because we have to care about these people. And again, I just feel like everybody wants them just to run him to Saul. And I understand the series is entitled Better Call Saul. But if we don't care about the people individually, then it doesn't really mean as much to me.
Which character, if you could have a flourish of them becoming revealed, which character would you choose to see more about?
Well, I'm kind of desperate at this point in a very nervous way to find out what's going to happen with Kim. And I think it would be really cool to see what's driving her and what drove her even prior to this flashback that we saw in this.
But I think we will see that.
I think we will.
I'm thinking of a character that we probably won't see as much as we want to know about them, and I'm thinking of Gus. I'm thinking that we won't really ever know as much about Gus as we want, or I want to know. They'll keep him secret.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I liked horrified the story he told. I like that little touch into his background. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think we're going to ever know a whole lot.
It is better when he speaks quietly and whispers.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying when he does that. It was really, really scary. And I went back after I watched that part of it for the second time, I think. And I watched the episode where Hector actually killed his friend. I forget his name now. Do you remember?
Gus's friend?
Partner, yeah.
Max,
yeah. I actually went back and watched that, which of course we know was a flashback on Breaking Bad.
That was my favorite episode, I think. It's, apart from the endings, the Ozymandias and Tahajali and the finale, but I think that was one of my favorite, if not my favorite episode of Breaking Bad, Salud.
I should go back and rewatch it because watching
that.
I
thought you said you just did. That's where he shoots Max.
No, I only watched that scene. I didn't want. No, no, there's no way I had the whole time to watch the whole episode, you know, since last night. But after hearing this Gus story, it kind of compelled me to go back and watch the scene of what Hector did to him and see Gus' reaction and everything of it.
So. What did you think? In that scene, I remember them making Gus look younger. And he actually did look younger. Because it was a flashback. What did you think about this episode's people trying to look younger?
You know, I think that, look, you can only do what you can do, right? But I thought it was fine. I didn't think Jimmy necessarily looked 10 years younger. Kim was more like in her dress, looked younger. Chuck, I thought it was kind of, they did the thing that everybody does on video, kind of blur it out a little bit to smooth the lines away, maybe a lot of makeup or whatever. I didn't think he particularly looked younger, but I could definitely see the effort. Wow, what did you think?
I think they pulled it off with Kim. I don't think Jimmy looked younger, and Chuck had a cheap hairpiece that made him, I mean, you had to notice that he looked different, if maybe not younger.
But it was
Kim
sad.
They did well with.
I thought they did. I don't know that she looked younger, but her demeanor or whatever was younger. She didn't look old anyway, so it'd be
hard
to make.
Did you remember from all this other stuff in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, did you know that Kim worked with Jimmy in the mailroom?
You know, I didn't. I did not know that. I actually made a note that I might have missed it. I didn't know.
I knew that either. I think that was news to me during this episode.
And that's quite a ways. So we see really how far back Kim and Jimmy went. And I don't think I knew that it was that far at all. But there was like a lot of words in this episode that I had to look up. I didn't know what these things were. Did you notice that? Was it just me?
What words?
Okay, like a sally port. I'd never heard of that before.
I think I've heard it before. I don't know if I ever looked it up.
Yeah, well, I'd never even heard it, I don't think. Or paid any attention to it, certainly if I did. A hair shirt.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You have? Where Mike tells Stacy that she doesn't have to wear the hair shirt forever. I didn't know that. Right sizing in place of downsizing for a company. I've never heard that term being used.
It's a spin on downsizing.
A lucuma tree. I'd never heard of a lucuma fruit before. I looked it up, never made sure that I'd never heard of it and just forgetting it or that it wasn't called something else. A coati, which I thought he was saying at first coyote, you know, just in his dialect or whatever, but that wasn't it. It's a coati, a member of a raccoon family. And then, what else? Oh, a rube.
A rube? Jimmy. You've never heard the word rube?
No. I've never heard the word rube, and it means like country bumpkin.
You know what they say, Michelle, if you don't know who the rube is in the room.
I don't know. I don't know that I'm going to argue that point at all. But I just felt like this episode was full of like this deep sadness. It really like felt heavy to me. We see the link to which Jimmy went to have what he wanted with Kim. I mean, years of planning. And no wonder he was so willing to sell advertising and do whatever he had to do to keep that office with Kim. And I don't think Kim knows any of this, or she's just not as committed to him, not at all costs, like he is to her. But it just felt like Jimmy is literally hanging on by a thread, and that thread's maybe about to break, or maybe it's already broken and he's falling. Kind of reminded me, I kept having like this image of Jimmy falling, kind of like of Don Draper in the intro of Mad Men, a continuous fall And that's what it feels like kind of is going on with Jimmy.
Well, Kim joining that new law firm, they're the ones that are in the Sandpiper case against Jimmy's going to be against Kim, it looks like, in some part of the future, if he's still at all connected to that case, which I think he is, because he's paid for it.
And I read that, but I didn't think that was the case. I don't think that's accurate. I don't think this is the people who are in Sandpiper. I think Hamlin McGill were the ones doing Sandpiper, because that's who Jimmy went to try to get them to take the settlement. Somebody said that. I read that on Seppenwall or one of the others that I read. I'm sorry, I can't remember where, but that's not actually true. This new company is the one who took over the mining rights guy. I don't have his name right in front of me. We'll come to it. But the guy who was drilling for oil that Kim was trying to take on as a favor to Mesa, to Kevin, the Mesa Verde guy, and she had the wreck because it was too much. She was burning the candle at both ends. I don't think this company had anything at all to do with Sandpiper.
But this other law firm was from that time. I bet they do. I bet it does. They wouldn't reference it if it didn't.
Yeah, they screw up a lot. They really do screw up a lot. Not the show, but the people writing about it. Sandpiper was definitely run by Hamlin McGill. Because remember, Jimmy met Howard in the basement or the garage talking to him about settle this, because he needed the money. And Howard's like, you're just going to have to wait. And Howard's not affiliated with this. That's an error somebody made. It had nothing to do with Sandpiper. It had only to do, I think, with her affiliation with
How did we, where did this Schweikert guy come from then? Because I remember him from whatever scene he was in before.
This is the guy that Kim gave the land deal to, the like I just said, the part where the guy was drilling and it had went over state lines or something.
Yeah,
and
the oil was coming from one state into the other. But that just kind of recently happened. Schweikert was in like season one or whenever, a long time ago, he was in the elder care thing.
Well, maybe, but I definitely remember Jimmy talking to Howard about the Sandpiper settlement. Definitely. Right. So I don't know. Maybe there's more than one law firm associated with it. I don't know. But you ready to just jump in?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we start off with Jimmy and he's back in the mail room. And even then, you know, he's like running this like gambling Oscar pool thing between Howard's End and Scent of a Woman, from what we can tell, although we know now that Unforgiven actually won. This tells us when it was. It was circa March of 93, which is roughly 10 years prior to where we are now in the show. And this is where we see that he and Kim are doing the same job. And I noted here that I did not know that. So, I mean, maybe I should have, but I didn't.
Yeah, and one of the movies in that Oscar contention was Howard's End.
Howard's End, in that kind of prophetic with the wording of that. We see the young Chuck, and Kim is so enthralled with him and what he has just done. He's won this case using some obscure law, and she is like just gushing over this feat that Chuck has done. And Jimmy's standing there kind of looking like a buffoon beside her. We find out that Kim's a third year law student, and Jimmy makes a comment to Kim that'll be her someday soon. And she goes, yep, and walks off. So she's like really enthralled with this. She's really loving this. And then we see Jimmy walk away. Okay. He walks away and he goes past the library. And then he goes back to the library. Now, this is the point in which Jimmy decides to become a lawyer, correct?
Yeah, I think that was part of that scene. But another big part of the scene was Kim balking. I saw her balk twice. First at Chuck belittling Jimmy when he kind of condescendingly made some snide comments to him.
Okay.
Like, you're a mailboy. You know, you don't quite understand this. And then when she balked at that, that'll be you soon. Like, I don't know if I like that. Like, she kind of gave it second thought. So she kind of sees this hint of Chuck that she's really impressed, like you said, by him. But also then she sees, like, wow, what a fucking asshole. I can't believe he just said that to his own brother. She sees these two little things that she doesn't like. And they very subtly, you could see on Ray Seahorn's face, she's very good at conveying that she does not like those two things.
That's interesting, because when I saw it and she made the face, I wasn't sure if she was doing it at Chuck or at Jimmy, kind of trying to insert himself into the conversation, obviously having no idea what he was talking about, and if that wasn't kind of off-putting to her. But you think it was about Chuck?
Yeah. It's like, okay, wow, this great idol that I have. God, it's kind of an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes more sense, because then Jimmy comparing her to him would have then made her a little more uncomfortable. So, okay, so then we see Kim, and she's working Mesa Verde. It's at nighttime. Her heart isn't into it at all. She keeps glancing at the pro bono cases. And then she ends up, like, doing this physically and symbolically move by putting the Mesa Verde file on top of the other files. And she goes to where Jimmy's sleeping, and she's all smiles and everything. And then she finds his notepad that he'd been working on when obviously he fell asleep. And it's got the names and logos that Jimmy is kind of obsessing over for their new office. Now, Kim's face here, it seemed like she was very put off by this, right? Kind of like you might feel.
She is.
Yeah. Why do you think?
She doesn't want that. She doesn't want that future of them being a partnership law firm partnership.
What? But she did. What's changed in her? The pro bono work? She doesn't want to do that anymore. She doesn't want to just continue to do Mesa Verde. What do you think?
Could be that. It could just be knowing that you're not supposed to work that intimately with somebody that you're in a relationship with. Could be all of that.
Yeah, okay.
I think she's found what she's flourishing in, and it's not Wexler McGill. It's Wexler World. Wexler pro bono helping slobs that are unfortunate people.
Well, then we go to the next morning. Jimmy's making juice. They make small talk about a statue she's trying to get for Mesa Verde, which is, she's even mocking. We find out that Jimmy's hours are now set. He works weekdays 9 to 4, which I think will probably come up again, this 9 to 4, because he's kind of he's like made it known now. That's his hours. And then he really starts opening up to her and tells her that it's a dead store. So she takes this as an opportunity to ask him about the therapist. Well, then I guess you've had time to, you know, schedule a therapist. And this is where Jimmy's honest with her and tells her he decided not to go. And that the times went by, he's calmed down, he realized this is not for him, he didn't want to do the navel gazing. Okay, so he says here he needs to be moving forward, which kind of turns out to be a prophetic statement in that she is really the one who wants to move forward. And she seems startled that he says this.
Don't you think it's worth it that Jimmy says, hey, I thought about the therapist that I know you want me to go see, but I decided it's not for me. Don't you think that honesty overweighs the fact that he's not going to see the therapist? Like, it's worth it? That honesty seems huge in a relationship like theirs, where they seem to start hiding more and more things. I don't know. I just peg that honesty as something important and good for them.
Yeah, and it's like, I completely agree. And it's like, every time Jimmy tries to do something right, somebody, he gets smacked for it. Every time. And I think this instance where he was honest with Kim, I think it was the turning point for her. The very next scene is where she goes in to talk to Rich and thanks him for seeing her on such short notice. I mean, the very next scene. And even though he's honest with her, or because maybe he's honest with her, it doesn't bode well for him or his future. And I wonder how many times in a person's life they can have something like that happen and it not really, you know, force them to, or not force them, but compel them to go down that more slippery road.
I'm just wondering why they're putting this little superstructure back together for Jimmy and Kim. It's like bolstering their relationship again back to a bit more of strength. Like, she pushes him on going to see the therapist, and then he honestly tells her that he's decided not to. That's like a good thing. I like that she pushes him. That's good. And I like that he tells her the truth. That's good. So it's not like they're in a steady decline. It's like this is a reversal. They're kind of like rebuilding a little bit here.
Well, in a normal life, yeah. But I don't think that's how Kim views that at all. I think Kim views it as...
No, she doesn't like that he's not going to go see the therapist. I get that. But the fact that he's honest is really good.
The fact that he's honest is good for his character, but it's not good for their relationship, even though it is good. It's the only way to be. It's just part of the continue. I guess I kind of disagree, because I think it is the decline. He can't be honest with her of who he really is, whether it's good or whether it's bad, because either way, she's not happy with.
Well, yeah, he can't be honest with him being slipping Jimmy Saul on that path.
No, but he can't be honest with her about, hey, I've thought about this, and this is not what I want to do. I just want to move forward. I'm not going to see the therapist. He can't be honest about that either, because every time he's honest with her about anything, it feels like it causes a decline in their relationship.
Well, but he is honest with that's what he did.
I know. And it was no more good for their relationship that he did that than it was if he told her, you know, about pooping in a skylight. I mean, none of it.
Skylight. Sunroof. Yeah, I don't think the information was good, but the fact that he was honest was good. That's what I'm saying. And I'm just wondering why they seem to give us a little bit more hope towards Jimmy and Kim than we kind of both think. I think that they're not going to be together, but why give us this hope? There's a couple other things I like. I like that they plan their dinner at their morning partings, Michelle. That seems like a cool boyfriend girlfriend thing to do. Like, hey, how about sushi? You know, it's like 6 a.m. and he's like thinking about dinner and what, when I see you again later in the day, how about sushi? Like that, how about Thai food? It's kind of a romantic thing. I like that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also his way of taking care of her in a way, because he's the one always planning the food. He's the one making the juice. By the way, you got to rinse out those juicers. You can't leave it like that. That would be a monster to clean, but yeah, he's taking care of her. I'm curious if you would think, though, since based on what you just said, if you would think him telling her the truth about his slipping Jimmy stuff would be a good thing. You just said it's a good thing that he told her the truth, even though it wasn't good for the relationship. Do you think it would be a good thing for him to tell her the truth?
Well, of course, that information to her would be like, are you kidding me? You're doing what?
Would it be good?
Well, it'd probably be borderline.
Because he'd be telling the truth.
I know. I get what you're saying, that too much of the truth, if you don't like the basis of that truth, will destroy the relationship. Because she'll have that information. I'm just saying that the fact that he's being truthful when he could easily be deceptive, it's interesting in the story that they put that in there. Like, it's a little bit of hope. Like, duh, Jimmy didn't have to tell her that truth, but he did.
Right.
I know that his path is not one that she would like if she had the entire truth. You know, buying cell phones and hanging people upside down and whacking them with a bat and everything else he's doing is not information that Kim would like to see.
Yeah, probably not information that she would tolerate in a boyfriend, I wouldn't imagine.
By the way, Michelle, that goldfish is giant now. He's becoming a megalodon goldfish. Did you see that thing? It's like size of a fist now.
No, I actually didn't notice, to tell you the truth. I've had, though, it reminds me of aquatic frogs. Somebody got it for one of the girls for one of their birthdays when they were little, like tadpoles that turned into frogs. And they're supposed to be like the size of a quarter. And we had three. And the tadpoles morphed and turned into these little aquatic frogs that swam through the water. And they kept growing. And they ended up literally like the size of your whole hand, not your palm.
That's a gift that you should ban that person from friendship for.
Mike, we had these for 5 years because, of course, the girls loved them. And we ended up having them in these huge tank because they shed their skin and they shed it more often as they get older. They're only supposed to live for like 18 months or whatever, 2 or 3 years. They live for five.
Did you shed the friendship of that person?
I don't even remember who did it, honestly. I think it was actually the oldest daughter who gave it to him, so I couldn't. But, so that was kind of reminds me of that when you're talking about how this thing grows and grows.
But, well, in case they listen to this podcast, Michelle, that was not a good gift. I'll say it so you don't have to.
No. Nothing alive, I'll be happy to say it, is a good gift. But, you know, I mean, sisters giving it to sisters. I don't know. It was sweet at the time, and it wasn't supposed to be such pain in the butt. But, oh, my goodness, it was a monster. 5 year stinky, smelly, aquatic adventure. So.
Yeah, those would have escaped down my kitchen sink drain, I think.
Oh, these would have clogged your kitchen sink.
Well, not when they were tadpoles, they wouldn't.
Well, true. That's not nice.
You don't get rid of them after the third year. You get rid of them after the third hour.
Poor little tadpole. You wouldn't do that. I don't need to know this truth about you, Mike. Okay. Kim is in Schweikart and Coakley. That is so hard for me to say. Schweikart. Okay. And Coakley. She meets with Rich. And this is where we find out that it's the Billy Gatewood. That's the guy's name, the driller, the oil guy. We find out that she has 3 weeks left on her cast. Now, they didn't just put that in there, I don't think. I thought, because I was wondering why would they say that? Not much time has passed, right? She only had to wear it for what, 9 weeks total? Was that it?
Yeah. Yeah, Michelle, I forgot to mention this. During our very first podcast of this season 4, this is 406, by the way.
Yes, Pinata. It is. Pinata.
During episode 1, I forgot to mention that they were wearing the exact same clothes that we had, that I used the picture for them for in 310, the ending episode of season 3. That's how little time had passed. They were literally wearing the same clothes. So, yeah, this is a very compressed whole season is 2 months.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Less than even, you know, right at 6 weeks or so, maybe.
2 months minus 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, seriously, almost no time at all has passed. And we're going through all of these. I don't know. It feels like a long time. And I'm not real sure that the continuity is there with the stuff that's going on with Mike and Gus. Considering that no time at all is passing with
Kim. Well, you know the continuity's there just by knowing who's putting this all together.
Well,
that's why I say the whole Schweikart thing. I want to go back and figure out now what Schweikart was doing with Sandpiper. Because that's not something that they just missed. And
but
I know
they
I remember
didn't
Schweikart.
Say that.
I remember Schweikart being important back in whenever season 1, 2, or 3 that he was adversarially important to the whole story.
Yeah, I didn't remember that, and you could be right, but I definitely know that the Sandpiper thing was Hamlin, was Howard, and that.
Well, maybe it moved from Schweikart to back to Hamlin McGill or. Something there was related to Schweikart.
Okay. Well, I could definitely be wrong on that.
By the way, everyone seems to know that Jimmy and Kim are an item. Like, this rich guy knows that they're an item. I didn't really realize that either, that the whole world knew that Jimmy and Kim were a couple.
Well, do they know that, or do they just know maybe that they had an office together?
Maybe, and so they would but think he kind of says something like, how are things with Jimmy? I guess that could be office professionally related, but I guess I took it, like, personally.
I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't think it would be too odd, would it, that they knew that? That people knew. I mean, they've been living together. This has been going, who knows how long? It feels like it's been going on for years, but maybe just a couple months that they've actually been living together. Seriously. I don't know.
It just seemed like it was news to me. To me.
Yeah.
But what do I know? I just do a podcast.
Yeah, I don't know either. She tells this rich guy that losing the Billy Gatewood thing hurt her, but he's like all complimentary. Well, you know, we're just taking over where you left off. He loves her and everything. And then they get like to the brass tacks. She's come there because she wants to do a banking division. She wants to actually start up a banking division with this firm. So she kind of pitches herself.
Yeah. What do you think? How do you think Kevin and Paige are going to receive this news?
I actually think they're going to be happy. I think Kim will be able to sell it because, first of all, they've outgrown Kim with, it's not what she agreed to at the beginning. I think they showed us that with the room full of expansion that they had. So I think they'll be happy to have other people that they can fall back on and rely on. Why do you think?
Maybe, but they, first of all, Kevin's outgrown it himself. He's outgrown everything with his grandiose plans in that stupid room of all those little castles he's going to build and conquer the world of banking in the southwestern oil business or whatever that whole plan is. He's outgrown himself too fast. He's dooming himself by too much expansion. But I remember Kim saying, I'm your only client, or you're my only client, and I'm going to give you 100% of my time. Now she's enlisting this team, which you're right, it will help her by having a whole team of people where she's clearly overloaded. But I don't know if Kevin's going to view this as a, I don't know. And I don't know that he'd be so wrong to view it that way.
No. I mean, it could certainly go that way. But again, this is not what Kim signed up for, all these different expansion things. She didn't sign up for that. She signed up for the one thing, the one branch. And it was almost killing her working just that, if you remember.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
true. She was working like 20 hours a day. I mean, you can't expect her to be able to handle all this, and she would have to take on. And they were okay with Viola coming on. So, I don't know.
Kevin didn't hire Schweikert and Company Banking Division. He hired Kim Wexler. And Kim Wexler and her paralegal is different than Kim Wexler being part of another law firm and its new banking division.
That's true, but I don't think they were necessarily against the big law firm. Because remember, it was like a competition between her and Hamlin McGill, which was a huge law firm. But they went with her.
I'm just projecting the future, Michelle, that they don't put things in this story like, oh, yeah, great idea, Kim. Let's smoothly mesh this into the plot, and we'll all be perfectly happy. It's designed to create some sort of a conflict, and I'm trying to anticipate what that conflict is. And I think Kevin will not be happy about this.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, you could be right. I think if anybody's able to sell it, though, Kim will be able to sell it. And I think she has a great selling point. So I'm team Kim on this one anyway.
Rich Schweikert is the Kai German builder to Kevin.
Okay. That's going to take me a minute to flesh out
that.
Well,
I'm just saying that because of the next scene. But the Kai German builder who is the troublemaker, Rich Schweikert, is going to be. These are little pebbles that are going into the machine that are going to cause the gears to grind a little bit in the future. To run smoothly.
Yeah.
I mean, you think, oh, perfect. Now Kim has help. Now everything will be perfect. Let's go have a Moscow mule and be happy. But it doesn't work that way.
No, probably not. Probably not. That's why I said I'm really curious to see what does end up happening with Kim. And I noticed that a lot of people were speculating again this week on that this is going to be the break or the break's upcoming. And what that, how that relates to the beginning of episode 5, where Saul was giving Francesca the note to call somebody, but I don't think that's right either. And if it is, I don't think it was done well, because Francesca knows Kim. If she called Kim, she wouldn't have to say, tell him, you know, he said, tell him Jimmy sent you. Of course, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It has to be somebody that Francesca doesn't know, or otherwise.
Maybe it's Rich Schweiker. Maybe it's Kevin Verde.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it is.
Maybe it's Kai, German housing guy.
I'm guessing it's probably not Kai. Okay, but now then we go into the super lab laundry industrial place, and they have cleaned this thing out, right? And it is, at first, I didn't even know where they were. It looks so different. And of course, I mean, I knew, but I had to like connect the two things in my mind. And this was beautifully lit. It's always been dark and dank. And
yeah, is that the super lab laundry, or is that just a warehouse where they're going to house these guys? I don't think that's the laundry.
It's the laundry, I think. It has to be, because they're working in there. They're not allowed to leave that place for 10 months.
Well, maybe it's like a built-on part of the laundry. That's not the laundry where the...
I think it's the laundry. I think it is the freaking laundry. And I think that Gus took everything out. And, of course, we know he's going to put stuff back in. But I think it's going to be done in there. Because otherwise, I mean, they couldn't add all that onto it. That the timeline could not be accurate, in that 6 weeks have passed since we started this episode. And so, like, or the season, in 4 weeks, Gus has done all this or whatever. I mean, that would be insane if he had to build the building. It's insane, kind of, anyway. But what did you think about this area? There's like two houses put in the center facing one another.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of like what Google and Facebook and all these new tech, Silicon Valley tech people do, is they make the company so enticing that you never want to leave, that you're essentially creating a prison for your workers. So you have their lives like embedded in your company. And that's what Mike's done here. He's made like a recreation area, kitchen, food, housing. And I don't think they have the choice. I think they're locked in this place. I don't think they can go anywhere if they even wanted to.
Oh, no, 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 no. I don't think so either. They are, this is their, just like you said, this is their prison for 10 months. And I think Mike's trying to make it as comfortable as he can. He said they have to do more than just keep the guys alive. They have to make them comfortable.
I think that's kind of the culture. I don't know, because I never worked for Google or Facebook or Salesforce.com or whatever, any of these new companies. But I bet that's kind of like, oh, you're going out for dinner? Like, it's kind of frowned on, probably. Like, I know those people can leave and go away from their building if they want. But I bet it's kind of the culture that, oh, you're not going to be here with us when we work all night and have snacks here. You're going to go home and make dinner. I bet that's kind of the culture for those companies.
Yeah, I mean, it may be. And it's not even like having snacks here. It's like having the nicest of the nice catered to you, like maybe a place you couldn't even get into if you left to make reservations or something. It's like really taking it above and beyond. I mean, these guys likely in their home back in Germany didn't have a gym in their home and a basketball court in their home and a bar in their home and a theater in their home and everything else that Mike is setting up there. But yeah, these guys, they do not have an option to leave.
It's kind of funny that Kai gets in trouble for like pouring himself a beer and coming over late to the meeting, like a couple seconds late, because he's got a mug of beer. The whole enjoyment of having it is like being able to have it, and he's trying to dive in and enjoy the fruits of this new environment, but he gets in kind of trouble for it. It's kind of funny.
Oh no, he was disrespectful.
Well, I know that too, but he was kind of running over late and spilling his beer a little bit because he was not at the meeting on time.
Yeah, but I mean, he had to be called like 4 times to come over.
He's having a beer, Michelle. It's part of his perks.
It's not part of his what he's getting paid for, though. I am worried.
Don't badmouth Kai.
Young Kai. I'm gonna put my Jimmy bet coming around at my cubicle down and say that Kai might not be long.
He might get sent down to human resources.
He might. What do you think?
I think so. I think that's the plan.
Well, Tyrus comes in while Mike's talking to Gus and telling him everything that he needs, and tells Gus, all he says is there's a bad infection. I was thinking Nacho is what I was thinking when he said that. And we haven't seen Nacho in a while, and I don't like that a lot. But anyway, so Gus says he has to leave and that Tyrus is going to handle this. And so Mike continues the requests with Tyrus, telling him exactly what he wants and everything. And Tyrus doesn't even want to pen to take notes or anything. He's got it going. Okay, we come back from a commercial, and Jimmy is at CC Mobile, and he's on the phone with a sign company, and we see that he is, like, planning big, right? Bigger than the local sign company can even do, and they don't know anybody who can do signs this size. He wants a 24-foot sign of Wexler McGill. He's drawing the sign logo.
Did they say that 24-footer is for Wexler McGill?
No, but he's drawing the Wexler McGill logo as he's talking to this person. So I think
when he said that, I'm looking for a 24-footer, it made me think of that Statue of Liberty. Like, is he already planning the Saul Goodman Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, that's interesting, and it might be a nod to that, but I definitely think he was not. I think
probably,
he
probably, but if you think about that Statue of Liberty being blown up on top of the strip mall, that was about 24 feet.
Yeah, and he may end up taking his idea for Wexler McGill and pushing
that's
it into
true.
Song.
True. Everything he's doing, he's morphed. Everything he's planning for Wexler McGill, he's kind of morphing into Saul's eventual plan.
That's right. That's what I see. He gets the phone call from Mrs. Strauss' nephew that she's died. And now this breaks him up. And it was interesting to me to see him get so tore up over Mrs. Strauss where he couldn't over Chuck.
Yeah, it might be a little bit of his displacing his feelings for Chuck onto this Mrs. Strauss. I don't know. Maybe it's both.
No, I mean, I definitely think that's what it was. It's kind of feeling the loss, and it's kind of multiplied maybe because of Chuck's loss.
Yeah, it's a reminder of what he stuffed down inside him that he didn't deal with, that people die and this is how you feel when they die, and I never dealt with this with Chuck.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's the message.
It was another sad little thing, though.
He's too late for the memorial. That was set kind of sad.
Yeah. But he refers the guy out. And he brings up the Hummel, too. One of the relatives got the Hummel, which kind of nods back to the Hummel heist that he did. Ira, through him, did earlier. Then Jimmy goes home and he pulls up the old VHS tape of Mrs. Strauss and watches that commercial about the class action lawsuit against Sandpiper. His phone rings and it's Kim, and she's out at a good place, and Jimmy should be too. So
I put every guy needs a girl like Kim, Michelle. Every man needs a woman like Kim. She's a soul saver. She's smart, she's strong, she's fun, she's pretty, she's freaking loyal as hell. Every guy needs a girl like that.
That's funny, because it was a really nice compliment to Kim, but Kim's breaking away from him as you're saying this. I think.
Well, if Jimmy McGill was smart, he would say to himself, that girl's breaking away from me for a reason, and it's because of the fuck-ups I'm doing. And he would get his shit together.
Is that why, though?
I think so. She wants what they could have had if he was on the straight and narrow, and he's not on the straight and narrow.
But she doesn't know he's not on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, but she wants him to go to therapy. He doesn't go to therapy. That would have helped him a lot. He would have vented all this. He probably would have figured some of this out.
Yeah, maybe, but, I mean, does he have to do everything she feels like he should do?
No.
I mean,
but
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Her advice / girlfriend whatever requests to him are good. If he would have just followed what she wanted him to do and still been him, she lets him be himself. He's his own man. She just doesn't want him to, she wants him to be healthy, you know?
Look, obviously Kim has Jimmy's best interest at heart in most of what she's done throughout the relationship. I don't think at all what she's doing here with this Schweikert. I cannot get that in my brain. I can't get it there. But Schweikert and Coakley group is not in Jimmy's best interest, and she knows that. I don't think she realizes, though. But, you know, we have to also, though, Mike, go back to, they just started out this episode showing us Jimmy went to law school for Kim.
Yeah, he wanted to impress her.
Right. It wasn't just about Chuck. This is how the length to which Jimmy would go to be with Kim. And he finally got what he wanted. He finally had an office with Kim, he and Kim, and Chuck ruined it. And, I mean, what a blow, something 10 years out of your life. What, you know, I don't know, if you're lucky, you know, a 20th of your life or a 10th of your life or whatever. But, and it's just ruined. I don't know.
Yeah, but Jimmy got in trouble, and he lost his law license, and he had to work as a frickin' cell phone salesman, and Kim was still loving him and happy with him, and yeah, work your way through it. A year from now, you'll be back on track. She doesn't need him to do what she wants to do. She just wants him to be straight and narrow and successful and work hard, and she's in love with the kind of prankster guy that he is when they do those little pranks in the bar with people.
Yes, she was, but I don't think she is anymore. And that kind of brings up this scene right here.
Because he's failing. He's ruining his life, and she's seeing it get ruined. And he's not taking steps to correct it.
But see, that's not true. He is taking steps to correct it. He gave up the whole side pay-as-you-go phone thing, nighttime thing, after he got beat up and everything. And then he told Kim, I'm going to try to go to the therapist. I'm going to work on this and everything. Of course, then he decided not to. But he was still on the straight and narrow. He was still trying to do what he felt like was right until Kim delivers this blow. And then that's just, he's like, okay. And still he handles it well. I mean, he handles it to her. I don't think he handles it well at all. But he's kind to her about it.
Yeah, but he's not following her advice to go get himself straight with the psychiatrist, which is a big thing. Not giving up the cell phone thing. He just spent all his money to, like, reinvest and double down.
No, he hadn't done it yet.
Well,
and I don't think he was going to at all until this happened. And also, Kim's not being honest here. I think we got to talk about that for a minute. She tells Jimmy here about this pro bono work. He doesn't know anything about it. They were spending their nights watching Casablanca or whatever, and then suddenly they can't spend their nights watching Casablanca because she has to work on Mesa Verde, and she doesn't tell him, I'm having to work on Mesa Verde because I'm spending my whole days doing pro bono work. She's not even honest with him. So I like Kim. I think Kim is a great character. I think she's a really good girlfriend and everything. But I do see flaws in her as well. No comment?
Well, okay, but, you know, they're both human. They're not perfect. But I think Kim is a really good influence on Jimmy, and had he followed a lot of her advice, he would be a lot better off. And I'm just saying that guys that don't have correcting persons in their lives like a Kim often go astray. And, you know, that's a good influence usually for people is to have somebody saying, you know, if you're not feeling good about this, you should go see somebody to get help. And that seems to me that coming from Kim is another reason why she's such a great partner. I don't know. I don't see her doing much wrong. She's following a career path that's tricky and complicated.
Yeah, but it's not, though. She promised him that they would go back into this together. They would hang their shingle together again when they had to let the other place go. Standing outside, sharing a cigarette. She promised him, kind of. She insinuated, at least. I think she actually promised him that they would have it back again. And maybe
that's a part of why Jimmy's going astray, is that he can't have his dream with Kim. And maybe that's something that I'm missing, that I'm not putting enough importance on. But I think if Kim sat down with Jimmy, or Jimmy sat down with Kim and said, hey, you know, this, I'm freaking drawing love logos about our law firm, and it's not happening, and I'm really sad about that, I think they could have talked their way through it.
Yeah, I don't know, because she knew he was drawing the love logos. And that was part of what turned her off, I think. And even here, when she talks about how she's doing the criminal law and the pro bono and the public defender overflow, and it shocks Jimmy because he didn't know. And he turns on a dime and he goes, you know what? I've been thinking about doing that too. And he has like this, he changes his whole life vision. And the logo now is criminal law. And he's willing to do that for Kim. I don't know what else Jimmy could do for Kim.
Well, that's not good. That, to Kim, Kim's going to view that like, oh, he's just doing whatever I'm doing to try to please me. That is not a good thing for a guy to do, clearly. But I think Jimmy could have been, he could have said to Kim, I'm quitting the law. I'm going to be a cell phone magnet salesman. Entrepreneur, and she would have said, great, I'm glad you're my boyfriend. I don't think she needs him to do what she's doing. He thinks he needs that. It's Jimmy's problem.
It is, because it's Jimmy's life goal. It's Jimmy's motivation. It's Jimmy's reason for having even become a lawyer was to do it with Kim, I think. And now she just, and he worked so hard toward that, and now she just kind of shot that in the foot.
She's doing what she needs to do in life, Michelle, and that she's being honest with him like he was being honest with her about the not going to the psychiatrist. She's just telling him that, hey, I'm public defender work is where I think I really need to be. I give her credit for that. Like, that's
sure,
honesty.
But of course. And she does need to do what her heart tells her to do in her business. But I don't know that she couldn't have done that and done it with Jimmy, too. You're not going to make a lot of money doing the public defender overflow, but you do make some money. And she could, she could have had the office with Jimmy. And Jimmy, I think, would have been happy to have taken over the financial part of it. Or maybe even more, you know, a little more than her to have that with her. I don't know.
I think we see the order. We've hammered this to death, but I think we see the order of this differently. She's not breaking away from the office from Jimmy because she doesn't like Jimmy. She's breaking away because she wants to be a public defender, I think.
Yeah, see, I kind of disagree. I think that seeing the logos and everything made her realize that's not what she wants anymore. When she saw that that's
well,
Jimmy's...
that's the like, career she doesn't want. That doesn't mean that Jimmy's not the one she doesn't want.
But why can't she do that and still
I don't know.
Have the same office as Jimmy? I don't understand what difference it would make.
I don't know, except for maybe what I said, that Jimmy just doing whatever he can to please her, maybe that's unappealing to her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, you know, back in school when you would go out with somebody for like a week and then, you know, some of the girls would sit and write Mrs. Whoever down a page 500 times. I imagine that would be kind of like, I'm not ready for this. And I think that's kind of how she's feeling with Jimmy. But the panic attack that he has was, it was sad. It was so sad. I actually thought he was going to have like another one of those cardiac, not events, because he didn't have a cardiac event, but what would appear to be a cardiac event. But Kim lets him know that this job is going to give her the ability to handle Mesa Verde, because she's going to have staff that'll do that. And it'll pay the bills and free her up to do the work that she actually cares about. So this is going to be like her way of still being financially successful and getting to do her passion.
Right.
But he goes and has his panic attack, and he comes back to the table, and he kind of, you know, says, okay, well, I think you should do it. Look out for yourself. And he can't ask her to wait around for him, and a lot can happen in 10 months. And then they toast to Schweikert, Coakley, and
Schweikert.
I'm never going to say that right. Schweikert. Okay. Schwei. Big I. Okay. So it's pretty sad, but Jimmy, did he handle it well? I started to say he handled it well, but don't you think he should have let Kim know? Or no? I don't know.
Let her know what? He's not happy with it?
How much that hurt him. Yeah. Not just
that
you're happy.
I don't know if he has a right to not be happy with it. I mean, it's her decision. It's her. We really have hammered this to death, but it's her decision. It's her career path. She's doing something that she wants to do in her career. And he's, you know, he tells her to do it kind of because he has to tell her it's okay to do it.
Yeah, but if you're going to say that he's supposed to be honest in the therapy thing,
maybe
shouldn't
he's not quite sure. This is kind of news to him. Like, oh, this isn't going to go the way that we thought it was going to go. This is kind of like, I mean, he's doing the best he can with it, I think.
Yeah. Okay, then Mike goes to Stacy's house, apologizes.
Are you getting these commercials, Michelle? So they had, this was a commercial break. First of all, this White Boy Rick movie with Matthew McConaughey looks pretty good.
I did. I actually made a note of that, but we've just talked for so long, I didn't know if you'd want to go into something like that, because we're so, me, probably so long-winded in this. But yes, it did look good.
And then are you getting the Truvada commercials that when I told you about this Truvada commercial during like episode one, I think. Are you getting those commercials?
You know, I don't think so. I skip the commercials as much as possible, but I don't think I am.
It's a commercial for a drug called the pre-drug, and it's for people with different sexual tastes, and they clearly show like transgender and all the different LBQMT people. And it's called Truvada, and they call it the pre-drug. It's clearly a drug you take before you have sex, gay sex, or like more risky types of sex. And it's kind of like a preventative to, I don't know how it would work, but it seems like it's a preventative towards HIV type problems that you might get from that type of sex. But it's clearly, and I don't know, I'm in Northern California, so maybe they only show it here. But it's clearly like gay couples. There's like clearly a dude that's like in the process of becoming a woman. And it's like a freaking commercial on like a primetime TV show. And when I first saw it and I told you about it and I got the crickets like I'm kind of getting now from you.
Yeah, maybe
I freaking dreamt this or something. Or maybe it was like a, you know, a scam or something. But I've seen it a few times now.
Yeah. I have not seen it, and I honestly hadn't thought about it again since you said it the first time, because I've not seen it. I am going to have to go back seriously and watch the commercials in this episode to see, because I have not seen this at all, and I would think that I would see it. But you're right. I didn't even know what it was. I just looked it up. Truvada is a prescription medicine that can help reduce the risk of getting HIV-1 when taken every day.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
So times have clearly changed since we saw "Hey Mikey, he likes it" commercials. You know, you'd never think you'd see something like this on TV like 10 years ago.
Well, times have changed. You're right. Well, you wouldn't. And times have changed about that. And also some of the other stuff, it's just, I don't know. I think we're aging ourselves here, but that's interesting. But so Mike's at Stacy's house. He's apologizing for what he said at the grief meeting. He's not sorry about saying it, but he's sorry about evidently getting her involved in it and hurt by it. And Stacy, to her credit, forgives him pretty quickly, and she assures him that she's never going to forget Maddie. She tells him that Anita's still upset and that he should call her, and Mike says no. And then he offers to pick up Kaylee, and she's happy to let him do it. I thought it was kind of neat to see the softer side of Mike.
All right, so should we hammer Mike and Anita like we did Jimmy and Kim? I think Anita's in the rearview mirror with Mike. I don't think Mike's a settled down kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't know that Mike wouldn't be a settled down kind of guy, but I think it would take a pretty unique person to be with.
Well, like Kim, Mike. He's got lots of projects that need his attention, Michelle. He doesn't have time for relationships.
That's true.
He's got to call out every charlatan he sees, and women don't like that. They like to get along with people.
Okay. I'm not going to argue. So Jimmy goes into Hamlin McGill and sees that they're, I wrote downsizing, but of course we hear that it's right sizing. And
back to Mike though, at first quick second.
Okay, sure.
For everything we see about Mike being sure, he's pretty sure about everything he does. He's pretty unsure here. Like, okay, I saw him as being unsure, which I don't like seeing in Mike. I like that Stacy calls him Pop again. That's kind of the, apology, calling him Pop. But there's always been this distance that we wondered about between Mike and Stacy. Do you think that it really exists between them, that it's still there, and this is kind of a review of that?
Yeah, I don't think that the distance between Mike and Stacy has actually happened yet. I kind of thought that was it. Because it seems like we talked about this last time, but it seems like that in Breaking Bad that they are just coming back together after some distance, if I'm remembering that accurately. So I thought this might have been the start of that, but now I don't think it was. Her calling him Pop was a term of endearment. And, you know, you just said that you don't like seeing Mike this way. I do like seeing Mike this way. I viewed it more as vulnerable and honest, and I mean, Mike's honest to a fault anyway, but he loves them. They're the closest thing he has to his son, and I like seeing his love shine through.
I don't like seeing Mike vulnerable. Mike Ehrmantraut is not vulnerable.
Everybody's vulnerable.
I know he is, but he shouldn't be.
It's how
Mike freaking Ehrmantraut, man.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, I just wonder if that distance might come to between Mike and Stacy might come to play some important part of the future.
I think it does, because if I'm remembering Breaking Bad right, then it does come into play. Something happens between them that is, you know, some separator. Okay, but this is where Jimmy has the conversation with Howard, and Howard says that the firm's reputation isn't what it was. And Jimmy kind of mocks him at this point. He gives him maybe some tough love, some, you know, he gets him mad. He keeps on until Howard gets mad, and then he says, use that to
motivate yourself.
Right, to take care of this business, which I thought was, I don't know, was that good? I felt like it was good because Howard's like wallowing.
It is good. By itself, it would be good, but this is kind of a revenge mode episode for Jimmy, so I'm wondering if they just want this to be another little part of Jimmy's revenge. Like, he almost revels in this, buck up, Howard, get your shit together. You know, that's kind of a that's kind of a celebratory moment for Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I mean, I thought Jimmy tried to look on the bright side of it. So you're making the office more feng shui. I mean, he was like really trying to look on the bright side of it. And then when Howard told him that, he's like, stop wallowing. This place is all you've got. This and your hair. And let's be honest, that's going too.
Yeah, I think Jimmy's smart-assingly being critical of how he's telling him to buck up, which is good. And I think he sincerely means that. But the office is skimped. They're threadbare and they're losing it. And Jimmy's making comments about that.
Yeah, but I think it was his way of putting some fire under Howard. You're not a good lawyer, Howard, but you're a great salesman. So get out there and sell.
Maybe, but it could be the left-handed compliment type of fire.
Maybe.
Get your shit together, man. You're a mess. That's, if somebody has done you wrong in the past, that's kind of a, it's not healthy, but it's kind of a, you can kind of revel in that revenge a little bit.
I guess, but at the same time, to me, what would have seemed worse is if Jimmy had sat there and said, oh, Howard, man, I'm so sorry.
Well, he's not going to do
that. You're never going to recover from this. Oh, sure he would. Jimmy would do anything. Remember how he was at the insurance office? And, I mean, he would cry, would do anything if he really wanted to be hurtful. I don't know. I just didn't take it that way. But he had went there to get his check, the $5,000 that his brother had left him, that Chuck had left him. And then we see him outside the nail salon taking delivery of a pallet of pay-as-you-go cell phones. So I have no idea why I did this, but I counted these cell phones, right? There was 200 on that pallet. Each one had 350 minutes prepaid. So that's 1,166 and a half hours of talk time on those phones. It's a little over 48 and a half days of talking if you talk 24 hours a day. So I just thought you might want to know what your $4,000 could get you. Oh, and that was, he paid $20 per phone.
Yeah. What does he sell them for?
I don't know. We don't know.
Michelle, by the way, do we know when Jimmy got into Mrs. Gwynn's nail salon? I know he's in there when we first started seeing Saul, or Better Call Saul, as a series, but how the hell did he get into this nail salon?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we do know. I kind of had it in my mind that he was there as a poor law student, but maybe not.
Yeah, he's breaking apart with Kim in the office, but I don't remember him signing up for this nail salon space ever, seeing that as part of the story.
Yeah, I don't think we have. But he's carrying these phones in, and he is having to carry them like 10 or 20 at a time. He's getting in everybody's way.
Right through the nail salon business while the ladies are getting pedicures and stuff.
There would have to be like a back door he could do this at, right?
Maybe not in a shitty strip mall. That is not a nice place.
Well, he gets in the back, and he's on the phone with Dr. Caldera, the fish vet, working out some deal to get these phones distributed or sold or whatever. And the idea is evidently to put them in piñatas, which I thought was the name of this episode. I thought that's what it was referencing, but we see it's much more than that in a little bit. He convinces the good doctor that he's taking good care of the fish and hangs up. And then Miss Newland comes in and scolds him.
Mrs. Gwynn, right?
That's not what came up on my closed caption.
Well, it's Chinese, Gwynn, N-G-U-Y-E-N. Okay. I think her name's Gwynn, Mrs. Gwynn, with an N as the first letter.
Okay.
I don't know. I could be wrong.
I could be too.
She doesn't like the phones because they're a fire hazard, which is a stupid. It's a stupid. I don't know what that technology is type of thing to worry about. Like a phone is a fire hazard.
Yeah, she just doesn't want people coming in and out of the
office.
Right.
She's making up a dramatic reason to not have it, by calling it a fire hazard.
But then she kind of shakes him down for the phone.
Yeah.
And then she tells him that get rich quick schemes never work. And this is where Jimmy says, "Watch me." So if he paid $20 for them, I tried to go back and like look up the history of cell phones and how much you would pay retail for a pay-as-you-go phone in 2003, and I couldn't find it.
Well, in 1903, it probably would have been about
$600,000. 2003.
Yeah, it's probably, you probably think he's trying to double his money, so probably $40, I would think.
That's not, that's a lot of work for $4,000.
Well, he's got to work at what else? Everything he does, he's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean, he's going like on the underground to do this, but I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it's 200 because they're hard to get. I don't know. Maybe they are in demand, and I have no idea either. I'm just guessing that.
Yeah. Okay, then we go to the scene where Gus is sitting in the dark room with a sick Hector.
By the way, Michelle, on a burner phone, so those 350 minutes get used up? Do you just throw it away and get a new one, or do you get it recharged? Do you get it re-minuted?
Well, I mean, if you're using it as a burner phone, I would think that you throw it away. I wouldn't even know if you would finish the 350 minutes. But most of those pay-as-you-go phones, you certainly can re-up them at least
so
now.
So it has a phone number and everything all ready to go. You walk out of the store, you start making phone calls, and somehow, somewhere, AT&T has your phone number activated?
Yes. They're usually through a... as of a few years ago, they're usually through a company like AT&T or T-Mobile or whatever. And yes, they each have a phone number assigned to them, and you just get the phone and it's already got the minutes preloaded on it, and that's your phone number, and you can use it and call.
So when that phone's snapped in half and thrown away, that phone number is just in the ether, just like no one will ever use that phone number again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they do that. I'm sure that after so much time, maybe it's discontinued and...
recycled.
Right, I would guess, yeah. But yeah. Have you never had a pay-as-you-go phone?
No.
When we go to Florida, like, every year, you know that, almost. And when we were first going down there, the cell phones that we had here wouldn't work anywhere outside, like, our area right here, if I'm remembering that right. And so we got a pay-as-you-go phone, I got a pay-as-you-go phone down there so I could have like a phone in the area that would actually work with the service down there. So it's been
in my drug smuggling business, I use beepers, pagers.
Beepers. Oh my gosh, you have just dated yourself now. Okay, yeah. So... okay, now we go to Gus sitting in the dark room with the sick Hector, and Gus tells him this story, and he's speaking quietly. It's like it's torturous. It's almost, how would you describe it?
Yeah, it's Hector with the infection, right? I think we said Nacho. Yes. He thought it might be Nacho, but it's Hector.
Right.
He's
That's what I was thinking.
He's worried about Hector's health still for nefarious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, this is pretty good Gus theater here. And this is Gus, the Gus that we know and love. Is Dia del Muerte? No, I can't talk. Dia del Muerte, death. Day of death.
Yeah.
Doll.
Yes. I think we're seeing everybody being kind of vulnerable in this. We see Jimmy be vulnerable. He has to go to the kitchen. We see Mike be vulnerable. And I don't know if this is Gus's vulnerability, but it kind of is. It's not really to anybody, but it's almost like he's telling Hector like this bedtime story. It's a really weird, kind of creepy situation where he talks about this Lucuma tree and how he nurtured it to keep it alive and how poor he was. I mean, he didn't have to add all that. I mean, I guess he did for us. It told us the story, but to tell this stuff to Hector, assuming Hector could hear him, which we don't know.
Well, I think you're onto it with the vulnerable thing. He's telling Hector is now totally vulnerable to like an inch of his life being over. He was vulnerable once. Gus was vulnerable once, but then he fought and he got stronger and he recovered. And he's kind of telling Hector, "You're never going to recover from your vulnerability. You're stuck, and I've got my thumb on you."
Right. And I had a situation with a coati which, like I said earlier, is like a raccoon, like a form of a raccoon, and it took something away from me, and I essentially kept it and tortured it.
Yeah, it took took that fruit that he sold, right?
Right. Right.
I never heard of a Coati, but I've heard of a Coati Mundi, which I think Coati is short for Coati Mundi.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's that animal that stole his only avenue of food. And
the deliciousness and everything that he had that he had never had before in his life, the sweetness, he talked about it like how it tasted like caramel. And it was just this beautiful thing, and it brought prosperity and happiness to his family and everything. And then it was taken away from him by this animal. And I think he's comparing Hector taking away Max in the same way.
The animal was vulnerable.
And he was ruthless.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was also talking about how long he waited, how the animal got underneath his shack. And he knew the animal would have to come out. And he waited there overnight. He waited. He was going to wait until the end. He was going to win. He was going to have his way with this. And I think that's what he was telling Hector.
Hector's future.
Yep. And then we get that great close-up of Hector's hand. I kept waiting on the finger, but it didn't.
Did that mean that he could have called for help, but he didn't? I'm not afraid of you. I don't need help. What do you think that hovering over the bell hand meant?
I don't know. I think they were just, no, I don't think so, because he doesn't have the bell, and he hadn't had the bell, and the bell's not part of it yet. I think it's just showing us the dead hand, the still hand, comparatively to what we see it with later on. Okay, then we go to commercial and we come back, and this is where the lab crew.
More commercials, Michelle. I've got to talk about some more commercials.
Okay.
So, Walking Dead commercial was one.
Yeah, they're artsy.
Like frickin' Maggie is releasing zombies onto Rick now. What the hell happened to that show?
I don't know. And it was so artsy and so glammed up and everything. I don't know.
That show sucks.
Are you going to watch
it,
though?
It's so stupid. No, I didn't even watch the end of the last one.
You didn't? Well, speaking of other shows, though, you know that True Detective's coming back, right?
I didn't know that, but that's good.
True Detective Season 3 coming back in January.
Another podcast on the West Coast Project Network.
Another podcast. And this one looks like it's going to be more in tune with season one, which was great. And season two was not great, in my opinion. It was devastatingly not good compared to season one. And this one's going to be about missing children in Missouri, I think is what they said. So pretty excited about that.
The other commercials on the show were like glasses, urinary pads, and hotels.com. It's like old people are watching this show.
I did not notice that at all. I'm going to, okay. I'm seriously going to go back and I'm going to make note of the commercials I got. Because maybe, wouldn't that be something? You know how like on social media now, they advertise commercials directly to you? Based on things you've clicked on and stuff like that. What if they start doing that in...
Is that why I'm getting the Truvada and...
The Truvada and the urinary incontinence. I don't know. I don't know, Mike. You know, I don't know what you click on the web. So I don't know.
I do watch it through PlayStation View. I do watch it through like internet-y means.
Okay. I don't know. It's funny. So I'm going to go make a list of the commercials I get, and I may or may not share depending on what they are. I'm thinking there was like car commercials on mine, and I don't know. I'll have to see. So the crew shows up for the Super Lab crew, and they're all excited and everything, and Mike calls them over, but this guy, Kai, is disrespectful to Mike. He's not only disrespectful to Mike, he's also disrespectful to Ziegler. When he calls him over, he's like slurping the beer and he's like, where are the girls? And
where are the girls?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any girls coming or going. I don't think anybody is going to be coming or going.
These guys are pretty funny. They like the bar. There's football, basketball, soccer, recliners. It's like man cave, total man caveness.
Yeah. Well, we find out they're going to be working 10-hour nights, a lot of physical labor getting this done. And then the rest of the time, they're going to kind of be living up there in that area. Mike tells them to relax and settle in. He goes over everything that's in the houses and everything, and that basically he doesn't want any drama from them. Divide up the rooms however you want to do, and don't tell him if they're not, you know, if they're not friends or whatever. So then Mike leaves.
He has to buzz out to leave. He has to request his exit. That's how locked in they are.
Yes. Well, he goes through that Sally port that we were talking about earlier. That they talked about.
It's a prison. They're locked in there, man.
Well, and he even tells them about the phone. He says there's a phone in each house that will go directly to me or one of my guys, and we're going to get you anything you need.
Yeah, so that was comically like evil, like having a house, a stupid house inside a warehouse. Oh, this is my house. I'll go over to your house. They walk 15 feet across the warehouse floor. There's another house. It just looks silly and evil at the same time.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty ingenious the way they had it set up, like a real true, it was almost like a small village in there with everything you could want, but freedom.
No girls, no freedom.
Well, no girls, but you're not going to be able to have anybody else. Nobody else can know.
Oh, come on, Michelle.
Sorry.
They're going to be stir crazy in there. Kai's going to start a rebellion.
Well,
they're going to be sneaking out like boys in a boys' summer camp to find the girls at night.
Oh, do they have Sally ports at boys' summer camp?
These guys are excavators, man. They're going to find a way out of there.
They're not going to get out unless they're buzzed out.
We'll see. Yeah,
I'm not picturing a Shawshank Redemption kind of, you know, tunnel, but what do I know? So track-suited Jimmy is back at the laundry to make a deal with the three young muggers. And they got off on the wrong foot. Jimmy sees a need for, he sees a need for safe, affordable, untraceable phones. And if they let him sell his phones without hassle, they get $100 a night for doing nothing. And the main guy is like, no, and give us all your money.
Yeah, Jimmy gives them a sustainable deal. Do you think he really meant that? Like, he really hoped that they took that deal? Or do you think he knew this was going to go this? Because he was ready for it to go the other way.
I think he meant it. Don't you? I think he would have done it.
No, maybe. I mean, he's looking for sustainability either way. Like, he's either going to get a deal with them and pay them off, or he's going to, like, scare the hell out of them. So I don't know. I don't know which is better, to pay them off $100 a night. That's a lot of money for doing nothing.
It's a lot of money considering what we know about those cell phones and what they cost and everything. Yeah, it is. But, you know, I think Jimmy was trying to reason with them. Let's not turn this into anything ugly.
Probably. That's probably what he wanted.
But they give chase, and he leads them down this dark alleyway into a dead end. And here we see Man Mountain and Huel come up. And they're masks. And then the next thing we see is this great kind of hard to orient with my eyes, my visual, this visual craziness of the guys upside down with their mouth taped in a pinata store, factory, whatever it was. And this is where we got the bat dragging on the floor.
Right. Like Huel, the cousins and the axe on the parking lot with Hank.
Definitely a nod toward that. Huel and Man Mountain are beating the pinatas, knocking the candy out. And it's not taking them more than like one swing to get these pinatas opening up either. It's terrifying the guys. Jimmy takes the duct tape off the main guy's mouth and tells him to, you know, talks to him and makes the guy swear up and down that not only will they not do anything, but they'll put the word out that nothing's to be done to them. And the guy's like begging and pleading, and one of the guys swings the bat and just literally gets it just millimeters from the kid's face. Jimmy acts like he doesn't even really have control of these guys, which is even more horrifying. And then, of course, we see that it's Huel and Man Mountain.
Yeah, this is why I wondered if Jimmy wanted this to go this way all along, or if he wanted to actually start paying them off. Because getting them super scared, and then even better that than them being scared is them getting the word out. Like, paying them the $100 wouldn't get the word out. This will get the word out. Like, you don't fuck with Jimmy McGill.
Yeah, I just took it more as like Jimmy wants to do what's nicest and easiest and in the best interest of everybody for as long as he can. But when he can't, then he's going to do it his way. He's going
to
do it anyway.
I don't think I got that he wants to do it the nicest for everybody involved. I think he wants to do it the most effective way.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I'm kind of relating it to Kim and stuff, too, and his relationship with her. He wants to go to this job that's like literally sucking the life out of his soul because he wants to make Kim happy and he doesn't want to rock the boat. But when that doesn't work, then he's going to do things his way. And I think that he wanted this to go as smoothly as possible, but the kids aren't going to let it happen. Now, what did you think about what he did with these kids?
What do you mean, what did I think?
What was your overall take on that? Was it good? Was it bad? Was it criminal? What do you think?
I think they deserved it. I don't know if it was, I mean, it's clearly not good. It's not a legal thing to do. But I don't know. I think it's justice, a bit of justice. And you gave them whatever chance if he really meant the $100 deal, they had a chance to take a good deal, and they blew that too. So it's like double justice. I don't know. It awoke that vengeful side of me that made me feel good when some justice gets served on a bully. So I guess I like that part of it.
Yeah, some comeuppance.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. And I don't know if we're not dating ourselves by saying this too, but I agree with you. It was something, he might have even been doing these kids a favor, because who knows how ridiculous they would have gotten and how strong they would have actually thought they were, just because they can take on one middle-aged man, three of them. But a lot of the people were really talking about how he committed like this moral sin. And obviously it's not a good thing to do. I don't think anybody could argue that. But at the same time, I thought it was completely justified and actually even almost kind into what he could have done. But that's not how most people took that at all.
It's kind of become a little bit of a theme in this show, too. It's like, I'm giving you the chance to make the right choice type of scene.
Yes.
Because Kim had that with the kid in the courtroom, too. Like, I'll give you this chance. Don't blow it. We don't know what that kid's going to do with his life.
Right.
And we don't know what these three goofs are going to do now that they've been scared. You know, they may become mega criminals. They may go on the straight and narrow. So it's interesting that they have these little micro themes in this show that where does criminality start, you know, even in the youth?
Well, true, true. And also, how many times did Jimmy give Chuck a chance to come around and to be a brother to him and stuff? I mean, he wanted what was good and right and wholesome, but he just never seems to get it. So that's the end of 406 Pinata. Next week we have 407. It's entitled Something Stupid, which doesn't bode well. Did you see the upcomings?
No, I didn't.
We see the outside of the industrial laundry warehouse super lab place. That place looks desolate. The big open fields and everything, that was crazy.
Yeah, it's out in the middle of the desert. That's probably the reason why it's the perfect place for Gus.
Then we see Kim walking into what looks like a commercial place that Jimmy has rented. We see a guy comes up to tracksuited Jimmy with a business card asking if he's Saul Goodman, which was the guy on the card he was holding out. And then Mike, Hector is awake. Hector's awake next week. We see Kim telling someone, this is unequal justice. You don't have the whole story, some female. We see Mike clanking glasses, it looks like with Ziegler. We see Jimmy talking to Kim saying, next thing you know, case dismissed. We see this Schweikert guy telling Jimmy, you don't think small, while Kim looks on. And we see Gus is saying to someone, I've kept you from your work long enough. We see tracksuited Jimmy fist bumping someone through a car window. And we see Hector's hand moving near a glass of water. Then we see Kimmy just driving a car, and she, like, it looks like she's turning around, kind of like you change your mind and you're going to go in the, you know, like do a U-turn. And Jimmy going into what looks like maybe a courtroom. And that's it.
Okay. But I'm not that excited about Gus. I mean, Gus is kind of a piece of shit guy. We know what happens to him. He gets what he deserves. So I don't really care that much about Gus. Hector. I don't care that much about Hector. I care a lot about Gus. That's the one thing I want to know more about is Gus. Gus's story.
Yeah, I just thought it was cool that he's awake, though. So whatever happens, he's been out this whole season, and now he's going to wake up. So what do you think that something stupid's going to be? Do you have any predictions? My question is just one thing? Just one thing stupid? Because we see a lot stupid, usually, that people do.
Well, it'll be something stupid that somebody does that gets them into a lot of big trouble. It could be the Kai guy. It could be...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the kids were stupid in this episode doing that, refusing to take Jimmy's offer.
True.
Jimmy doing something. I mean, was the space he was renting, the strip mall space where Saul's Statue of Liberty goes?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it'll be a twist. It'll be something stupid done by somebody smart like Kim.
Maybe. Or maybe Jimmy renting this... office space is going to be a stupid...
Well, that seems obvious. That's why I'm saying maybe it's a twist. Like somebody you don't expect to do... Maybe Howard does something stupid. I don't know.
I don't either. We'll figure out next week, I guess.
All right, Michelle. So see you at 4:07.
Okay, Mike. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.